All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Have you forgot that there was a war going on in Ukraine? Did the whole world forget at one point that Russia and Ukraine are locked into an endless battle over the eastern districts and portions of Ukraine's territory? Well, here recently, we have an update to the escalation of the war. This coming to you from NPR.org. An explosive in the outskirts of Moscow has killed the daughter of a key ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Daria Dugina, 29 years old, was driving a Toyota Land Cruiser Sunday when the vehicle exploded. Authorities in Russia have launched a criminal investigation. She was the daughter of Alexander Dugin, who is often called Putin's brain. Dugin is a prominent Russian nationalist intellectual whose vision of a revived Russian empire came to influence Putin's war in neighboring Ukraine. For over a decade, both father and daughter have advocated for Russia's invasion. They have said many times that Russia can only thrive if Ukraine is destroyed. Dugin was placed on Western sanctions list as a key prominent of the Kremlin's forced annexation of Crimea from Ukraine. He also backed Russia's decision to send troops into Ukraine earlier this year. The United States imposed sanctions on his daughter in March after she served as chief editor for United World International, which the Treasury Department classified as a disinformation website. The United Kingdom also placed sanctions against Dugina in July. Several Dugin allies immediately suggested that he was the target of the blast and blamed the Ukrainian government, which has denied any role in the incident. Mikhailo Podolyak, a top advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, has said that Dugina's death is the result of Russia's domestic instability and not any military action from his country. He added that it is a consequence for her support of the war. Every person is supposed to pay for their words, quotes Podolyak in Ukraine. So, what do you think? Do you think this was a targeted assassination? My name is Doug Thornton. Welcome to the American Vindicta Show. I have recently been out and about doing another archaeological dig. Still in the same area, same cave. Really not much to report. It's just the down and dirty grunt work of laying on your stomach and digging. More to come. The more we are able to bring in more equipment and we are able to excavate a little bit more, then we'll be able to, you know, update you with a little bit more stuff. At this point, there's really not much more that we can do. We just have to wait for new equipment to come in. So just want to give you an update if any of you are still tracking on what's going on with the explorations. And what are we digging for? We're trying to find giants. Yeah, I said it. We're trying to find a giant skeleton that may or may not be entombed in the side of a cave that's in a cliff face. And it's kind of treacherous to get into it, but, you know, I have hopes, the team has hopes that we will fall more or less into a chamber that will be kind of relative to the Great Pyramid of Giza. So where the entrance is, hopefully there will be a 45-degree tunnel leading into a tomb area. So, pray for us. It'd be really cool if we can prove that the biblical narrative of giants did exist here in America. Not only does it help to prove the biblical narrative, but hey, for anyone out there who's a Native American, especially within the area that we're in, we're helping to prove your historical lore. So, you know, help us help you. And if you got any tips, if you know of any places where there might be an extra large skeleton laying down, you can send it over to AmericanVindictusShow@gmail.com and we can talk about it. So, back to the original story. Right now, I've been looking up Archduke Ferdinand and his assassination. Once again, as a history nerd, I always go back in history and to see what relevance there is. You know, right now there's a complaint that Russia is trying to empire build, or they're trying to rebuild the Soviet era empire. And that might be very well be true, and we know this is one of the future destinations of Russia if they get the economic prowess that they want. So, is what happened to Dugin's daughter, I think it's very unfortunate, I don't like to see any lives taken, but you know, it's a treacherous game that you play, and there are consequences whenever you talk about invading other people's countries and destroying countries. Well, sometimes fanatics will find you. This form of assassination, you know, especially within the Russian area, it's not exactly uncommon or common. It is a very well-known form of assassination to do a car bomb. Car bombs have been around since cars have been around. So this is nothing new. You know, right now everybody's pointing fingers. I don't believe that this is radical Islam. I think the last time radical Islam tried something like that, they bombed a subway. And then very, very bad things happened throughout Russia and many mosques. And I believe that community of people that live in Russia learned their lesson and have not done anything like that ever again. That's what happens when you get chopped up into hundreds of pieces and displayed. I think this is obviously an escalation. You know, a lot of people, especially me, have been saying that it's just kind of quiet now. And Ukraine's kind of, you know, it's like it's fading out of your memory, but yet there's a full-blown war going on. And right now it's really, it's a indirect fire kind of war. It's an artillery war. There have been the reports within the last week that Russia is eventually going to push all the way into Kiev now. So, you know, with that rumor, along came this assassination. So, you know, in my mind, I would say this is Ukraine. I'll never put it past any of the three-letter agencies. I'd never put it past it, MI6 or Mossad or the CIA. I don't believe this is civil war internally within Russia, like some of the political hosts and mainstream media have said. I see this as a direct targeted hit, and Dugina obviously was wrong place, wrong time. So, what do we have historically that backs any of this up? Well, Archduke Ferdinand. So let me build my case. Y'all all know I like to go back into history and give you as much example historically as possible to build up a case for why I think, you know, a bigger actual world war is coming. There's a lot of people who will just say, World War III is already here. It's not. They'll say, oh, you know, X, Y, or Z will cause World War III. Well, out of all the people who have date set, who have said, you know, this scandal or this problem will cause a war on this date, there'll be, you know, the real escalation of war. Let's look at history, okay? So, as per usual, I like to go to history.com. They have a very good way of just shortening down everything, you know. The reason why I like to go through various different historical websites is because, for one thing, I'm trying to give you information that is relevant, If I needed to give a college-level history class, this is not the time nor the place, nor do most of you want to sit through a 3 or 4 hour lecture. So here we can kind of just spin things back up into a relevant situation and talk about what led up to World War I, which then led up to World War II, which then created the Red Scare. And honestly, it's if it wasn't for Archduke Ferdinand being assassinated, we wouldn't have had Nazi Germany. We wouldn't have had the American Nazi scientist. I mean, this was a game changer. With the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, it sped up the rotation of the Earth's war footing, and it really turned the whole world into kind of this, cavalry charging on horseback and musket and ball style. Some of them were still musket and ball and bayonet charges and some repeating rifles here and there. To now we got tanks, we got planes, we got helicopters, we got blimps dropping bombs on people. And then within just a few years after that, bam, atom bomb. The death of over 12 million Jews. Nazi scientists experimenting on tens of thousands of children and people and prisoners of war. We have the expansion of the modern industrial race. And then we have the space race. Everything pivoted off of this one man's assassination. Now, I'm not saying that we can directly correlate this to Dugina's death. But if Dugin himself had been directly assassinated, what could that have done to Vladimir Putin's mindset? That's really what we're trying to get to here. Will we see a vengeance killing of Dugin's daughter? Will we see the man who has more or less been the brainchild of the invasion of Ukraine now probably being consoled by his friend Vladimir Putin, the head of Russia? Will they be planning a vengeance strike? Let's get into this. World War I, it wasn't just a conflict between nations. It was a war between empires. You had Western European empires like Great Britain, France, and they had overseas colonies around the world. France was, northern parts of Africa. They had stretched into other parts of Asia. Great Britain, all over the world, obviously. And then you had Eastern empires like Austria and Hungary. And then you also had Russia, who ruled the European countrysides and the North Asian territories that were all connected by land. Now, the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, it happened on July 28th, 1914. And itself, was itself an anti-imperialist murder. So, direct targeted political murder. The planned murderers were a political group called the Young Bosnia, and they were angry over Austria-Hungary's annexation of Bosnia-Herzegovina at that time. Now, European competition for imperial territories, it helped to set the stage for the rivalries that played out during the First World War, and the war in turn had a major effect on the balance of imperial power, or should let's say the imbalance of political and military power, all right? The Russian, German, Austria, Hungarian, and Ottoman empires, they all collapsed during a short time after war, after wars have started, and which ended with a treaty that seceded Germany's overseas colonies to all the victors. Now, by the time World War I had began, almost all of the African continent was under some form of colonial rule by Great Britain, France, Germany. You had Italy there, Belgium was there, Spain, or Portugal. Most of the colonization actually happened after 1880 during a period known as the Scramble for Africa, or the Partition of Africa, in which European empires competed with each other over the control of various African territories. Now, in the centuries before the Scramble of Africa, or the Scramble for Africa, European empires had actually invaded African coastal nations to capture and enslave people, but mostly hadn't managed to invade farther inland due to navigational difficulties and the threats of diseases like malaria. After the legal abolition of slavery, new technologies like steamboats and quinines allowed Europeans to invade much more of the continent. Now, obviously, there was more than just the capture of Africans for slavery, but you got to understand, back in the 19th century, the 17th century, the 18th century, the 19th century, slavery was still very, very well common. Obviously, it was still very well thought of. People still use slaves, and, you know, obviously America went through that period of time. And you actually had African tribal leaders that had enriched themselves by enslaving other tribes that they had defeated in battle and then selling to the Spanish, selling to the French, to the British. And it was still very much legal in the markets out in Britain at that point in time. The European empires that invaded Africa, they saw a colonization as a way to exploit the forced labor. They extracted the resources that were within the sands, that were within the beaches, that, you know, from there, the rich, fertile lands that were in the coastal areas of Africa, and they sought to take it for themselves, and then also capturing the people and then forcing the people who at once, it was their farmland, now it belongs to these various nations, and they're forced to work it. And because of this, these European empires became very wealthy, very fast, because of it. Now, although colonialism in Africa wasn't a direct cause of World War I, it helped to create an environment in which European empires thought of themselves as rivals who could only succeed at the expense of other empires. For example, France and Germany, two main rivals during World War I, also in World War II, competed with each other for control of Morocco in the decade before the war. Quote, "France and Germany did not go to war over Morocco," says Richard Fogarty, who is a history professor at the University at Albany and co-editor of Empires in World War I, Shifting Frontiers and Imperial Dynamics in a Global Conflict. From what the professor says, he says that what happened, though, was that they were conditioned to think of each other as competitors and to think of the world as this zero-sum game in which the French pursuit of empire could only come at the expense of the German pursuit of empire. Great Britain was also concerned about Germany's attempt to build a navy that might challenge its own. Although Germany was nowhere close to achieving this, the British couldn't even tolerate the idea of a threat to their naval supremacy because they had an empire to secure. And so, that made them hypersensitive to any competition. Does that sound familiar to a current situation with Russia and Ukraine? Insert NATO for all these problems that happened post-World War I that led to World War I. The expansion of NATO from originally being 10 colonies, or excuse me, 10 countries that were this, you know, it was the the next evolution of the League of Nations. This problem, cutting off the Soviet Union, is what really spurs everything that is the driving force for the Russian Red Scare that we have today. Now, obviously, the Russians and the Americans back in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, we didn't think of each other as allies. It was kind of, you know, helping one another, but not so much as becoming an ally for each other. And the way of thinking from the Eastern and the Western European countries was very different as well. French and British fears about Germany's empire building, going back to World War One, are part of what drove European nations to form alliances and informal agreements in the decades leading up to World War One. Decades. So, at certain points in time, I have to admit that I think it took decades leading up to World War One. Honestly, because the transfer of information and the ability to use propaganda by staging videos, the internet, the mainstream media, if these countries had access to that, mainstream media, internet, digital video, the ability to broadcast this on your phone anywhere around the world, it would only have taken a couple years instead of a couple decades to start World War One. That is what the information war is really about. It's the propagandist's best tool is information. Now, leading up to World War One, this divided Europe into two opposing camps. So we're going to talk about the imperialism that happened in Europe. In contrast to most of the Western European empires, the Austrian-Hungarian, Russian, and the Ottoman empires were contiguous with territories that connected to each other by land. On the eve of World War One, these three empires' borders converged at the Balkans, a region in southeastern Europe that the empires viewed as strategically valuable and played a major role in the start of the Great War. The Ottoman Empire had previously controlled much of the Balkans, but lost most of its territory there in the 19th century. Austria-Hungary took advantage of the Ottoman Empire's retreat by occupying Bosnia and Herzegovina and that whole region in the Balkans that the empire annexed back in 1908. It was this occupation and this annexation that the revolutionary group called Young Bosnia was protesting when it assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand. So, Crimea now, and then the DPR, the Donetsk People's Republic, which is the eastern side of Ukraine, right there alongside the Russian border that they want to annex. We're talking about a very similar situation now. However, what these nations didn't have back then compared to what we have now can make this war happen at any moment. It's why it's so important. From what our CIA can do with the, let's be careful here, assassinations, the tampering, listening posts, we already know that there's biological centers with biological weapons all up and down the Russian-Ukrainian border. Also training up guerrilla forces and rebel forces like the Azov Battalion that the CIA did do that with. You know, and all these things are a threat. They're all a threat to Russia. And Russia sees all this as a threat because Russia believes that the whole world wants to invade Russia and that we want to, you know, put all jokes aside about vodka, literally what the world would do is the world would seize on the timber, the coal, the oil, and the other mineral resources that Russia has, like the black soil, the fertilizer. Okay? That alone would make Russia a very tempting target for any nation that sees weakness upon that nation. Now, you know, it used to be, you know, you would blitzkrieg that country, march your troops into it, but how many different times from the Napoleonic Wars to Adolf Hitler did people try to invade Germany and it didn't work too well? Plus now, it looks like Germany has completely aligned itself with China. So, who is going to be the first big dog to try and take a bite out of Russia? Whoever it is, you got to understand Russia's power. Russia has a cyber criminal, cyber military weaponry stance that is on par with the U.S., maybe beyond what we can do. Russia has very many different ways of reaching out and touching America if it really wanted to. And part of the reason why I think America is kind of in the boat of the young Bosnians is because we are assisting the Azov Battalion, assisting a runaway government in Ukraine with the potentiality, if it's proved true, of assassinating now the number three person in Russia. I mean, that's big news. That's a big, big thing, because who told, if it's the Ukrainians, who told them where this guy was going to be? What car he drove? Who gave that information? Could it have been the Ukrainians from beginning to the end when the bomb was set off? Possibly. I don't believe it. Our government is way too willing to use our assets to track people and to assist Ukraine in their own military operations. And once again, hey guys, do we need to really go back into the past and talk about how many different times the CIA and this U.S. government has provoked war, has manipulated countries into going into war, has fabricated assassination attempts or other types of destruction of property or threats against the American people for war, a false flag for war like Operation Northwoods? I just think that there's more to what we're seeing going on right now. And many people are getting fed the same hook, line, and sinker from the mainstream media who are all saying that this is a good thing that happened. It's not a good thing that happened, right? If Vladimir Putin sees this as potentially what could happen to one of his children, and he makes the connection of Ukraine to America for this assassination attempt, I mean, that's a holy shit moment. What would Vladimir Putin do? I mean, we're talking about more than just cutting off the oil that's going into Europe. He could cut off the power in America if he chose to. You could do a cyber blitzkrieg, DDoS attacks, direct denial of service attacks, by filling up everything within our fragmented, fracturing, failing electric grid. You know, between the SCADA systems that have been around since the freaking 1980s, and we haven't updated them. Just a little 1 and 0 tells a valve to open or close. Foul that up, that valve stays closed, pressure builds up, and kaplooey, there goes your power for whatever district or region that you're in. And sometimes this takes weeks or months to replace these parts. Not only that, but I think if he was to do a blitzkrieg-style attack on America, cyber warfare-wise, satellites are getting attacked as well. I would. If I was to do it, I'd take the satellites out. I'd take the satellites out. I would convene with my Axis powers that America is trying to now instigate World War III by assassination like Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and that the only way to stop it is to stop America. Watch that. And he hasn't said that, all right? Putin has not came out and said that. Nobody's came out and said that. I have, because I war game, because I'm bored, and I think about these types of stuff. And I think that is a plausible situation that could play out. I'm not saying it will. I'm not saying it has to. Plenty of other things can. But historically based, it's a great possibility. Going back to the past. After the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, Austria-Hungary accused the neighboring country, Serbia, another nation in the Balkans, of assisting young Bosnia and declared war on Serbia. Now, Russia ostensibly agreed to back Serbia against Austria-Hungary because it was a fellow Slavic state. But Andrew Jarbo, who is a history professor at Berklee College of Music, who co-edited Empires in World War I, with Professor Fogarty, also suggests that Russia was also motivated by imperial interest in the Balkans. Quote, "I really think Russia's calculus is, if they don't respond militarily, they render themselves obsolete in this region. I agree with the professor, and I think it still holds true for the way Russia views itself politically and militarily." Watch the way Vladimir Putin plays this ping pong game with the world leaders. And watch how everybody loses their mind. But this man sits there quietly, confidently, and calculatingly responds to other nations. There are times when America has outright done some stuff that has made me in the past go, we're about to get into war with Russia. And Vladimir Putin took it on the chin and said, don't worry, I'm going to put that down in my little black book of remembrance. One of these days, America will come to call for the amount of times they poked Russia in the eye and dared them to do anything. Russia doesn't do anything. Not because its military couldn't. It could. I don't care who you are. Russia's military could effectively stand up to ours. But politically, economically, we are more of a threat of a nation than we are militarily. And nations would almost rather America come to its shores with war and let us beat our chests and burn a few villages and then build some McDonald's back later, because people know it's the way America does it with empire building, is that we'll come to your country, we'll fight whoever it is that we say we're going to fight, and don't you dare step in. In fact, I implore you to help us. And then the economic funding's going to start rolling, and that money train, it is always returning back to station with more money. Just look at Ukraine. I mean, you know, Ukraine is close to having $100 billion of your money, my money, sent to it. For what? For what reason? What the hell is Ukraine doing for me? Oh, by the way, they're in such need that now apparently young women in Ukraine are taking nude pics of themselves and selling it to help support their country fighting Russia. If you believe that, I got oceanfront property to sell you out in Arizona. What is happening is a very effective campaign of money laundering. We have so many of our U.S. military weaponry, rockets, guns, bullets, mine-resistant vehicles, self-propelled artillery platforms, whatever it is that we sent over there. Drones, for God's sake. It's all in the black market now. Any one of you working in one of the more particular agencies that are listening, tell me I'm lying. Tell me you can't find an anti-tank javelin in Ukraine that was sent to Ukraine somewhere in the Middle East right now. Or in China. It's there. Bet your sweet bibby. It is there. You know, I mean, to the extent, I'm not sure if I told you guys this or not. Just segueing from this this conversation real quick. This is coming to you from an article from news.usni.org. U.S. missiles sent to Ukraine aren't easily replaced. This gets stupid. The United States has shipped about a third of its existing arsenal of Stinger anti-air and Javelin anti-armor missiles to Ukraine. Systems that are not quickly replaced, says two experts on the Pentagon buying said Tuesday. Testifying before the Senate Armed Service Committee, Ellen Lord, who serves as the Defense Department's top acquisition official, says that Stingers cannot be replaced within the next couple of years because its production line has been shut down. I want you to think about that for a second. Our surface-to-air anti-air missiles cannot be replaced within the next couple of years. So if we get invaded, we have... How much? How much do we not have? How about that? Does anyone else now start to think that Joe Biden has been scuttling anti-armor missiles and anti-air missiles that can go to any small unit tactic team? He has scuttled it all out of country to Ukraine where it won't come back. If America got invaded, Ukraine wouldn't lift a finger, let alone send us all of our javelins back. So if we get invaded, guess what we don't have? We don't have the ability to wage war even the way Ukraine can right now. We're going to have to go back to a little bit more conventional method. Even with javelin, we are probably 5 years away from replenishing that stockpile despite its manufacturing line remaining open. This is serious, guys. This is really serious if you really, really want to get into the nitty-gritty about this. David Bertow, Chief Executive Officer of the Professional Services Council, has said that we have yet to see a single contract in place for the replacement of systems going to Ukraine following Russia's February 24th invasion, noting that one-third depletion of Stingers and Javelins. He says we're behind it. We are so far behind. We're not going to replace them within probably the next 5 years. Building up the stockpile of munitions has usually been the bill payer in Pentagon spending plans, and the United States is paying that price now. Ms. Lord said that the bill paying has included not making investments to modernize everything from existing infrastructure to just tooling alone within the manufacturing depots. And those shortfalls were only part of the story that the committee heard, as the United States is also sending other equipment from armored personnel carriers to howitzers. Yes, howitzers. To build back stocks needed by the Pentagon and American allies and partners? Ms. Lord suggested that the administration use Title III of the Defense Production Act, as was done to mitigate the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on the industrial base's workforce. Mr. Bertel added that a step like that would send an important signal, not only to industry, but to the workforce, that this was going to happen. Ms. Lord and Mr. Bertel said, you've got to start this now. Like freaking tomorrow, we need to start making rockets again. Even Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat out of Connecticut, in his question, he said that armored personnel carriers and other platforms and systems beyond Stinger and Javelin were drawn on to support Kiev and also have yet to be replaced. The challenge in the replenishment of all those stocks is extremely daunting. The committee met as Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who is an absolute idiot, gathered more than 20 allies and partners at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany to discuss how best to aid Ukraine as the war shifts to the Donbas region in the east and intensifies in the south along the Sea of Azov. How best can we support the neo-Nazi group Azov Battalion? That's what he really should have asked while in Germany. Secretary Austin has stated that Ukraine clearly believes it can win, and so does everyone here. I'm going to tell you right now, Ukraine doesn't stand a rat's chance in hell at defeating Russia. It doesn't. If we didn't send all this stuff to Ukraine, and Russia, I've said this before, if Vladimir Putin wanted Ukraine, within 96 hours, he would have had it. He would have. We would have. If America wanted Ukraine, we would own Ukraine in 96 hours. The United States and its allies gathered in Germany are willing to do what they can do to help Ukraine, says Lloyd Austin, adding that there has to be more work to be done. Well, is the planning an assassination of a high-ranking Russian official? Is that part of it? Because there was a period of time just a couple months ago when the whole world, like Lindsey Graham, Republican out of South Carolina, says, assassinate Putin. Somebody's got to do it. Take one for the team. Assassinate Putin. How many times did sweetheart Lindsey Graham come out there and say that Putin needed to be assassinated? So let me ask you this question then. Was this assassination that happened to Dugina, was it really meant for her? Or was it really meant for the father Dugin? Was it a way to get to him? Or was it just a tragic mistake and she took her father's place? Or was it planned for both of them? Either way, now you have a survivor. Now you have a distraught father who is the personal influencer of Vladimir Putin, who is the orchestrator of the invasion into Ukraine and the empire building of Russia. You could see Russia within the next period of a couple weeks, do something very drastic in Ukraine, address the world, blame everybody in America or Great Britain. It's not good. That's why I'm saying what happened is to me, it could be relative to the Archduke Ferdinand assassination. We could see the tip of the scale that was at one point in time kind of copacetic, really. I mean, sure, there's a war going on, but I mean, it pales in discovery for what happened in the past, though there are hundreds of thousands of people that are, you know, hurt, dying, dead in Ukraine. From Russia's side to Ukraine's own side. But, I mean, you know, where are these nations calling for peace? They're not calling for peace. They don't want peace. They want war. And what better than to serve their Lord Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum than to get rid of Vladimir Putin and replace him with a stooge who bends the knee and kisses the hand to the WEF. I think that is the overall end goal here. That's the way I'm putting this up in my mind. When Adolf Hitler rose to power, he deliberately used the existence of a previous German empire to justify his Third Reich, or Third Empire, which he imagined would take control of Europe. In his mind, the Holy Roman Empire was the First Reich. When he invaded into Poland in 1939, which, you know, obviously that's the spark that led to World War II, part of his rationale that he was conquering territory that rightly belonged to Germany, an excuse that many imperialists had used before a war and are still using currently, like China and Taiwan, like Russia and Ukraine. Sometimes you have to go back to the history of the why to see where the future of the how can be explained. I think this is the keynote here. This is empire building. We don't want Russia to have an empire again. American interest, the world interest in Ukraine, from snuff films, hardcore pornography films, human trafficking, sex trafficking, the mineral resources, the money laundering through political appointees like Zelensky, that holds more power than just the land does. And Russia wants the land. Now, I'm not going to say Russia is holier than thou at all, but it would serve Russia better to just go ahead and invade all of Ukraine and destroy the elements of the dark side of the power of the World Economic Forum and the American government, the occult, the sex slave trades. I mean, what would everybody do if they couldn't get these items anymore and Russia seized control of it? But would Russia actually seize control of it, hunt these people down, prosecute them, and do away with all these heinous things? Or would they capture it and then make you have to use them, pay them now? Which, obviously, our American government would never bow the knee to Russia for anything. Not mineral resources-wise, you know, even though Joe Biden gladly bought plenty of oil from Russia, even though he was shutting down our oil here. Food for thought. Do some research. Archduke Ferdinand. It's always good to get back in history and to find out how, you know, the escalation of World War I happened. I think all these things are planned, honestly. I think they're very well planned out. I think this assassination that happened was not... how do I say this? I think it was inconvenient that her father, Dugin, had decided to get out of the car But since they already had her in that car, because most likely this was a remote control device and not like a time device, I think they went ahead and hit the button just to kill her as well. You know, and because of that, that gives motive. If that was, and this is just my speculation, I believe if that was a military style hit, if that was a paramilitary agency that's involved in intelligence overseas, I think they would have waited for these two to get back into the car later that day and then, you know, follow them around and then blow them up together. All right. Because of the fact that the daughter was still blown up, and I'm saying I believe it's remote controlled. I could be wrong. It could have been a time delay device. But if it was remote controlled, then I speculate that it was a Ukrainian assassin, probably from the Azov battalion, who still blew her up because of the vendetta towards their country, and Dugin and Dugina saying that Russia needs to destroy Ukraine and invade Ukraine. And I think because of that, she was still a valid threat. Just like whenever we kill any Islamic terror leader from the Taliban or ISIS or whatever group that's, you know, still floating around, like Al-Shabaab out in Africa, any chance you get to kill a terror leader, you do it. Well, same thing here. Any chance you get to take down, parts of the bricks that make the empire, the castle that is being created by Vladimir Putin, anything to cause instability, really. That's what it really came down to. They targeted her. It is going to affect the instability, the train of thought, the mindset, the intent, the approach to war by Dugin, who is the influencer to Vladimir Putin. We'll see. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but that's the way I view this playing field. In other news, Ukraine has warned that Russia might be planning an imminent attack at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant. Now, we have talked about this nuclear plant a few different times, the significance of it. And amid mounting fears of a disaster, and with both sides alleging the other is planning provocations, Ukraine's national energy company said that many staff members had been ordered to stay home and that Moscow wants to disconnect the plant from the power grid. The Russian-occupied plant is the largest in Europe, with the two countries trading blame over who is responsible for attacks on the site in recent weeks. Concerns, obviously, for the safety of the nuclear reactor have sparked a growing international alarm and calls for a demilitarized zone around the site, which Russia has rejected. Not to pick sides here, but I would completely agree with a demilitarized zone around a nuclear power plant. I see the strategic reason for why Vladimir Putin wants the plant. If he actually could fabricate a way to take down the power to Ukraine, well, I mean, would you really let that strategic asset go away? I mean, you wait till the winter happens, and then you threaten to turn off all the power and kill most of the civilians. Well, now you got a negotiating tool. Energotum, the Ukrainian energy company, said earlier Friday that Russia is planning to switch off the power blocks at the Zaporizhzhia plant and disconnect them from the Ukrainian power grid. And this would deny the country a major energy source. It has also said that the majority of staff members at the plant had been ordered to stay home, with only those who operate the power units allowed in. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, once again, if It was my military strategic hold on a nuclear power plant. I only need it to run, which means I only need the operators and the maintenance guys to make sure the damn thing stays on and stays stable. I don't need everybody in there because of operational security, right? So here's a quote for you. There is information that the Russian occupying forces are planning to stop working power units in the near future and disconnect them from the communication lines supplying power to the Ukrainian power system. And that's what it said in a post on Telegram. The Russian military is looking for suppliers of fuel for diesel generators, which must be turned on after the shutdown of power plants and in the absence of external power supply for nuclear fuel cooling systems. There is no evidence to cite to support any of these allegations. Last Thursday, the Ukrainian military intelligence told an NBC's news reporter that Russian staff members at the nuclear power plant in southeastern Ukraine have been told not to go to work. This might be the evidence that Russia is preparing for a large-scale provocations at that plant Friday, according to Andriy Yusov, a spokesman for the Ukrainian Defense Military Main Intelligence Directorate. They're stating that Kiev warned anew on Friday that, this is last Friday, that the probability of a major act of terror at the nuclear facility is very high. Russia's not going to do that. That's not Russia's MO. See, here, once again, Kiev. When you say Kiev, you might as well start trying to spell Kiev with C, I, and A in it. This is propaganda. This is wartime motivational propaganda. There may be a terror cell out there that threatens the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant. Okay? But where does it help Russia's influence on the rest of the civilians within Ukraine and with the people around the world, the nations that are supporting Russia, by trying to destroy a nuclear power plant and causing a worse episode, a natural disaster, than Chernobyl? How does that help Russia? So once again, that's why I think this is bullshit. So for its part, Russia said that the defense systems of the planet, of the plant, have been strengthened due to what it said are fears of an attack on the facility by the Ukrainian military. Now, I actually agree with Russia. I really do. I believe that there would be a small unit that would try to instigate anything from the Russian military that is staged at the Zaporizhzhia plant for any type of provocation. They'll probably start it off with like a sniper attack, which is very common. Or some sort of a complex ambush on the people going in and out. But I mean, that's what I think is probably most likely to happen. And we'll just see how those things develop from there. The comments were made by Vladimir Rogov, a member of the Russian administration that is in control of this occupied region. And were reported by the Russian state news agency, RIA, Novosti. Rogov, who represents the Russian-controlled area of Zaporizhzhia, also dismissed as irresponsible and out-of-the-question calls for the Kremlin troops to leave the plant and allow a demilitarized zone. Russia said that the defense systems of the plant are going to be strengthened. There's probably some sort of an intelligence as to why that's being a contested area right now, because, I mean, between the Russian intelligence, Ukrainian intelligence, and the CIA and everybody else who's there helping out Ukraine, think about it like this. If you had the intelligence agencies of like 20 or 30 different countries all working in unison in Ukraine against Russia. And Russia only has itself and like two or three other nations helping them. I mean, that's a huge responsibility on the battlefield to maintain intelligence dominance. It's going to get crazier. That's all I got for you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Stay tuned. I'll see you next time. My name is Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. Stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.